Welcome, everybody, to today's ILTA pre-recorded podcast panel entitled What's Up? The Retention of Work-Related Messages. I'll be your moderator. I'm Andrea Shirey. I'm an e-discovery expert at Bayer US, and I am joined by George Socha, who is Senior Vice President of Brand Awareness at Reveal. Thanks so much, George, for joining us. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, first of all, thank you for letting me join. While I am currently at Reveal, I am no doubt best known as co-founder of EDRM and one of the people who brought the EDRM diagram to the world. I've been a practicing lawyer, testifying expert witness, consultant, and these days at Reveal.
Wonderful. So let's jump right in. So let's talk about this topic. So what are some of considerations that need to be made when setting a retention policy or responding to a legal hold from the technology side?
Well, I think those are really two different creatures. Setting a retention policy focuses more on what an organization is and does more generally in response to legal regulatory requirements or internal policies. A legal hold or litigation hold is typically in response to a specific lawsuit or set of lawsuits. It might also be in response to an investigation. For the technology, therefore, it can be very different technologies that are put into place. For a legal hold, often you will use a specialized tool of some sort, sometimes part of a larger e-discovery platform, sometimes a standalone tool. Retention policies, that's a policy. It's a written document. It can also be a policy as in a thing that happens within software that ensures that something does or doesn't get done with some data. But the permutations there are enormous.
Yeah, totally makes sense. So what are some of the challenges that people might not expect from extracting like text messages or messages from a source that isn't part of their computer?
So if we jump over to text messages, that's one of the more complex areas we face right now. It used to be that there were a fairly limited range of types of text messages showing up in a fairly limited number of platforms, and people didn't use them much, and especially not for business purposes. Today, there are certainly dozens, probably hundreds of different platforms that allow you to communicate via text message. Some of those may be platforms that are officially permitted and supported by a corporation. Many of them will not be. So the first problem you have is figuring out what platform people used. Then you have to figure out if they used a platform, where that data is stored, and what it's available through. Is it available through their handheld device? Is it a BYOD device, their own personal device, or is it a device issued by the corporation? Is data stored on the device? Is it on a computer instead, a personal computer? Is there data stored in the platform? Do you have access to that data in the platform? Is there a legal hold function within that platform or some other function that lets you preserve data? And it goes on for there. It's really one of the thorniest, knottiest issues we face in e-discovery today. How's that for an uplifting response?
Yeah, I get it. I get it. Yeah, totally. So what are some applications or places in a network or computer that people might not think about, but maybe would have some data that would be asked for?
The rather glib, apparently not helpful, but too realistic response is most of the places people use. And the reason I say that is I don't know how many custodian interviews I've done by now. Almost invariably, the custodians have a sense of what tools they use on a regular basis. They generally do not know where the data is stored when they use a tool. They create a Word document. They might know where it's saved. They might not know where it's saved. They probably don't know if there's a backup copy of it somewhere. And certainly if there is a copy somewhere, they almost certainly don't know how to get to that copy. They don't know if it's saved only on their computer and mobile device, a cloud storage location somewhere, a data center somewhere. Are there backups and in what form? They don't know. So what I find and what others I've talked with find as useful is not so much to ask people, what tools do you use, but try to walk them through their typical work life. Or if it's in response to a specific set of issues or topics, what they do with respect to that. Then you'll probably need to go, and I'm talking about people within corporations or governmental units, you'll probably need to go to someone else somewhere else in that organization or someone who supports that organization to get a better chance of figuring out where that data might then be located.
That makes sense. So at Bear, we bring the nerd. So I'm the nerd. So we attend the calls and screen share, basically. Show us where it's at, and then we'll figure it out on the back end.
Yeah. It's as good a process as you can have these days.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So what's a good way to handle privileged materials that might be in those formats or apps?
So one of the challenges with privileged materials is identifying what are privileged materials. The footer that we slap on the bottom of our email messages, indicating that it's a privileged communication, is worthless. All it does is make things more difficult, because it's a function of who's communicating with whom, about what, in what context. And there are very few hard and fast rules. You can be a lawyer at Bayer. I could be a lawyer with your outside counsel. That we are communicating via email using our company-issued devices and software does not mean that we are having a privileged communication. It just means we're having a communication. So someone's got to go through the hard work of trying to figure out what is and is not privilege. Historically, that's been especially challenging. Now, at least in some context, this doesn't help so much in the moment as the communications are taking place. But if you have collected data, you've processed it, and you have it in an e-discovery platform, there are some platforms that allow you to create AI-driven reusable models that can much more quickly search for likely privileged content and prioritize those files, email messages, text messages, word processing documents, whatever, put them to the front of the list so that you have a better chance of more quickly figuring out what's privileged. If dealing with text messages is one of our biggest headaches, privilege is right behind it.
Yeah, for sure. That's privilege review is very costly. So yeah, using any kind of extra technology is great. What are some simple best practices in communication of data retention?
So if you're thinking about data retention and what data should be retained for what purposes, it helps, first of all, to try to educate the people who are within your educational reach. That can be folks within your organization. If you are in a corporate legal department, you can potentially try to do some education in terms of how your outside counsel handle things. Or for that matter, if you are working directly with service providers or alternative legal service providers, or your law firms are working with service providers on your behalf, you can try to provide some education. The education is going to vary greatly depending upon what your focus is and what you're trying to figure out. But part of it is, if we're talking about retention of data, what data ought to be retained and under what circumstances? When, if it's retained pursuant to a hold, for example, under what circumstances that hold can be lifted, and when it's lifted, how you go about lifting it. You don't really, as a corporation, generally want your data to go out to law firms who then send them to service providers who then send them to other service providers and have none of those people ever get rid of any of that data at the end of a matter. You don't want that lingering on forever and ever. This is one of the commonly not tended to areas that I see. You get the end of the matter, the in-house counsel tells the lawyers, pens down, no more time billed. The lawyers move on to other things. They don't clean up the mess they've left behind. They don't contact the service providers other than to say to them, pens down to you too, no more anything billed. They don't say, okay, clean things up. And then the service providers will come back sometimes and say, well, if you want things cleaned up, it's going to cost this much. And then that communication doesn't necessarily make it to the in-house people. Oh, there's data sitting out there and the provider wants to be paid to get rid of the data. Running back to the beginning, as you set things up initially, for legal holds, for example, for e-discovery projects, for matters that are being handled by outside counsel and providers, you want to make sure that as part of that process, you make clear how you want things disposed of at the end of a matter. Now, you've got similar concerns within a corporation. There, it's back to what sort of policies do you have in place, how people have been trained, what sort of written policies do you have in place, how people have been trained, what sort of monitoring mechanisms you have, whether you have any technical policies to help enforce the written policies. Those details vary enormously from one organization to another, but you've got the same general objectives to try to achieve, which is keep control of where your data is and what happens to it.
Yeah, for sure. Track what happens to it. That's a very important statement. Any other things you want to share with us in general?
I think that it's useful to remember that there are various resources available. If you are in a corporate or a governmental legal department, you might have colleagues within that department or elsewhere in the organization. Can you help? Do you have records retention specialists within the organization, whatever umbrella they happen to be under? Do you have an information governance group? They could participate, probably do participate in these types of activities. If you are in a law firm, quite likely you have similar counterparts in your law firm, a larger law firm. You may not realize it, but you should get in touch with them. A larger service provider might also have someone similar. There are industry associations that you can turn to. ARMA is one example. When it comes to managing records, there are others as well. And then, and we didn't touch on this, this is a whole additional area. There's a whole area of data privacy and security. Areas of data privacy and data security, and we could spend hours just on that as well. And we are not going to do that
for sure. All right. Well, thank you so much, George, for your comments. It was very helpful today. Thanks for joining us. And I hope those who will be tuning in to view the session later will have find this of great value. So again, thank you so much. We really appreciate you.
Thank you for the opportunity.